Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I thought I'd see what good old Matty P was up to, what with him going through so many life changes, moving his family onto Kent Hovind's compound and whatnot, and lo and behold, he's still making videos on his own channel. Well, his new ones are kinda garbage. He's got two so far from Hovind's live streaming set, one of which is just him laughing at his complete misrepresentation of the surfing monkey thing, which I covered in more detail in video 4 of my Religion of Not Religion playlist. Oh, sorry, he's on Hovind's compound now, so I guess I should do that properly. I covered that on tape 4 of my award-winning Religion of Not Religion series. The other is a semi-new claim that there are giant cold slabs of rock in the Earth's mantle, which Matt claims is predicted by flood geology. At the moment, I haven't really been able to find his actual source for that, so I'm not going to go into detail on that one, but suffice it to say for now that creationist geologist John Baumgartner did the math for all of that plate tectonic stuff that would have happened during the flood, and determined that the energy involved in such fast tectonic activity would have rendered the entire Earth a completely molten ball for millions of years. So cold rock in the mantle is actually the exact opposite of what we would expect if the flood happened as creationists describe. So instead of going through those two videos, I instead chose to cover a video of his from September called Five Powerful Reasons Creation is True. So let's take a look.
I wanted to do a video about the top 5 proofs of a young universe and just demonstrate that the universe is not 13.7 billion years old, like people have said, but that it's actually young and was created recently. And the first reason that we know this is because of short-period comets.
Oh man, if such a weak argument is making it into your top 5, that does not bode well for the rest of this list.
Now, if you're not sure what those are, they are balls of ice that are floating about in space right now, and they deteriorate in less than 10,000 years.
Comet Halley is projected to have a lifespan of approximately 40,000 years, and it is not only a short-period comet, but a short-period comet that spends a lot of time in the inner solar system. It's actually the only one that gets close enough regularly enough to be visible to the naked eye twice in a person's lifetime. Now, of course, that's close enough to Earth rather than close to the sun, so there might be others with shorter periods that just aren't visible to the naked eye or are smaller or something, but this one's pretty significant. Now, how long a comet lasts depends on its size and how frequently it enters the inner solar system. But all of this is kind of a moot point, because we know of several sources of fresh comets from outside of Neptune's orbit. Creationists love to point out that we've never directly observed the Oort cloud, as if direct observation is the only possible way we could know it's there, but we don't even need to get out to the Oort cloud to explain why we still have short-period comets. The Kuiper belt is a thing that exists, and we have observed thousands of Kuiper belt objects. There's also a group of trans-Neptunian objects known as the scattered disk, which is a group of objects with eccentric orbits that bring them in close enough that Neptune can have a significant impact on their orbits, as in, it can drag them into different orbits that might fling them in closer to the sun. And lest you think the existence of the scattered disk has gone unobserved, here's a picture of Eris, the largest known scattered disk object. So we know that there are thousands upon thousands of objects orbiting outside of Neptune that could easily become comets if given the right little shove, and we have no reason to think that there isn't an even bigger cloud of such objects beyond them, even if we have not directly observed that cloud. But even if I hypothetically grant that the Oort cloud does not exist, there's still plenty of material in the Kuiper belt and the scattered disk to account for the replenishment of comets.
And so short-period comets are all over our galaxy, all over the solar system.
Well, we've only observed one rogue comet, that is, a comet that's traveling through the galaxy and is not gravitationally bound to a star. But we know that there's a lot of them out there. Actually, one of the ways we know this is because of estimates based on the gravitational behavior of the Oort cloud. Some 90 to 99% of comets from the Oort cloud get ejected into interstellar space rather than being sent into periodic orbits around the sun. Also, fun fact, interstellar space is probably a relatively small source of fresh comets. It's estimated that Jupiter manages to catch one every 60 million years or so, which would mean that this has happened some 75 times in the history of the solar system. And there are a couple of comets that are pretty good candidates for just such an origin. Now, using some back-of-the-envelope quick and dirty math, the probability that an event that happens once every 60 million years has happened sometime in the last 6,000 years is approximately 0.01. And we have identified two comets that are likely to have originated outside of the solar system. Two such events happening in the last 6,000 years only has a 0.0001% chance of happening. So it's not impossible, but it is way more likely that this indicates an old universe than a young one. But also, these are incredibly rough calculations. We are missing a lot of data that would be needed to do this properly, but why should we worry about minor things like lacking data? That's never stopped creationists from doing similar calculations about the origin of life or the origin of the universe or whatever.
And they are going about in an orbit and they are deteriorating over time. And if our solar system was 4.5 billion years old, those things would not even exist. They would have completely deteriorated by now.
Only if the solar system developed in a way that ensured that all of the comets actually made it into the inner solar system relatively frequently, or that it ensured that any comets that don't make it into the inner solar system remain undisturbed in their distant orbits. Since we know that neither of these scenarios is the case, then short-period comets are not a problem for the age of the solar system.
The second proof is simply the planet Pluto.
And just from that one statement, we can see that Matt is not interested in actually keeping up to date with scientific progress. It's been 15 years since Pluto was considered a planet. Also, fun fact, but Pluto is itself a Kuiper Belt object, so it itself is a part of the evidence for the existence of the cloud of debris that replenishes our supply of comets.
Pluto is warm on the inside. Now, if Pluto was from 4.5 billion years ago, when it finally was created back then, it would be freezing cold on the inside. There's no way that something could just stay that warm for that long, for the course of 4.5 billion years.
I feel like there's more to this argument than Matt is giving us. He's like a discount creationist. He kinda makes the same points, but he botches them in a way that undermines them. For instance, he didn't explain why we would expect Pluto to be completely cold by now in the first place, but not Earth. Now, knowing Matt, he probably just thinks that the heat from the sun is responsible for keeping the Earth's core molten. And in this case, the answer to how the Earth's core is molten is partially the same as to why Pluto can sustain a potential liquid subsurface ocean. It's radioactive decay. Also, Pluto might have a gas layer in between the subsurface ocean and the surface that helps insulate it. Kind of like those fancy thermoses with air acting as an insulator between two layers of stainless steel.
If you came to my house and saw a hot cup of coffee on the table, you would never assume that that cup of coffee was 4.5 billion years old.
You're right, I would not. Are you trying to suggest here that everything cools at the same rate, regardless of material, environment, mass, or any of a number of other properties that can affect how fast something cools?
I'm sorry, it would have cooled off over the course of just 10 minutes. But people have no problem believing that things happen to stay warm for 4.5 billion years.
I'm sure this will come as a surprise to you, Matt, but not everything cools at the rate of a cup of coffee sitting in a room that is at room temperature. Matt used to live in Michigan before he moved in with Hovind, so I'm sure he's familiar with the process of heating a house in the winter. The house does not eventually drop down to the same temperature as outside, because there's a constant influx of heat from whatever method you use to heat your house. In this case, radioactive isotopes are the home heating system, keeping the interior nice and toasty. Well, relatively toasty. Pluto, even in its interior, is still hella cold compared to the Earth, but it's got that furnace of radioactive decay combined with the insulation layer of gas to stop the heat from escaping.
Takes a lot of faith.
No, it just takes a few minutes of research. But also, fun fact, these hypotheses about Pluto are provisional at this point. We haven't landed a probe on it. We haven't directly seen any subsurface oceans. It's all based on inference, the same way we know about the Oort cloud. So if you want to do the creationist thing and say, but we've never observed the Oort cloud though, then by the same token, we've never observed Pluto's subsurface ocean. It's possible that the whole planet is just a big chunk of ice and something else that we aren't aware of yet has caused the surface features that we interpret as being caused by by subsurface oceans, and this possibility is actually stronger than the possibility that the Oort cloud does not exist. This is a classic example of cherry picking. Just uncritically accept the science that you think supports creationism, while offhandedly dismissing anything that does not.
The third reason is the planet Saturn. I mean, Saturn's rings are unstable. Saturn's rings are actually dispersing right now as we speak, and before long, those rings will be completely gone. Now, if Saturn, the planet, and the rings around it were 4.5 billion years old, those rings would have completely dispersed and deteriorated by now.
Wow, you're actually kinda close with this one. Good job. Yes, Saturn's rings are being lost, though the majority of that loss is them falling inward onto Saturn rather than them being flung loose like you said. Their maximum total lifespan is estimated to be about 400 million years, so no, they cannot be 4.5 billion years old. So why does Saturn have its rings if they can't possibly have lasted this long? Easy. The rings didn't form at the same time as the planet. They are estimated to be about 100 million years old. In fact, it's even possible that, while we exist at the perfect time to witness the beauty that is Saturn and its ring system, we are actually too late for the potentially more spectacular ring systems of Jupiter, Neptune, and Uranus. They may have been just as extensive as Saturn's rings in their time, but are just thin, barely visible circlets at this point.
But they're still there, which means that they were created recently, not billions of years ago.
Right. In this case, recently being 100 million years ago. Or 2,000 years ago, if we go by what one of the 17th century priests wrote about how when Jesus was circumcised, his foreskin ascended into the heavens and became Saturn's rings. But no, it was 100 million years ago.
The fourth reason is simply stars. Now, a star will die 1 per 25 years per galaxy.
That number is by no means a constant across all galaxies. And it's the wrong number for our galaxy to boot. Stars go supernova at a rate of approximately 1 every 50 years or so in the Milky Way. And of course, this is an estimate. There's nothing to guarantee that this rate has been a constant for its entire lifespan.
And so, if the galaxy was less than 10,000 years old, we would predict to only find about 200 dead stars in our galaxy. And sure enough, that's what we find. We find less than 200 dead stars in the galaxy.
Oh, you are wrong in so many ways here. First, there are 270 known supernova remnants within the Milky Way, so maybe go back to kindergarten and relearn greater than, less than, and equal to? And at a rate of 1 every 50 years, 270 remnants would put the galaxy's age at over 13,000 years. Certainly way younger than it actually is, but that's more than twice as old as Matt thinks it is. Second, the places in the galaxy that are most likely to have had the stars go nova are the places in the galaxy with the highest concentrations of interstellar dust, which blocks our view of them, so there are likely many more supernova remnants that we just can't see because of our location. And then, of course, there's just the faulty assumption that supernova remnants will remain visible indefinitely. That is just not the case. They can cease to be visible in anywhere from a few hundred years to about 30,000 years on the long end. It's like ripples in a pond. If you drop a rock in a pond, it doesn't keep rippling forever. Eventually, the water molecules return to their normal equilibrium state unless you drop another rock in at the same point. So, at most, if each supernova remnant remains visible for the maximum amount of time, there should only be 600 supernova remnants in the Milky Way galaxy at any given moment, and most will be blocked from view by the dust of the inner galaxy. So 270 is right around the ballpark of what we should expect to be able to see.
If you look at other galaxies, you'll only find about 200 dead stars in each galaxy, which means that if evolution were true and if the evolutionary timescale of billions of years was taking place, you would have hundreds of thousands of dead stars throughout the entire universe.
I think you meant in each galaxy throughout the entire universe, but we've already shown that this argument rests on some very, very shaky assumptions, as well as a misrepresentation about how often they occur in order to make the number appear to fit his desired conclusion better than it actually does.
Now, the fifth and most powerful reason is actually the magnetic field of the Earth and other planets.
That is your most powerful reason? That's the top spot on your young Earth evidence?
Jesus, Matt, the only way you could have chosen a worse argument to be your number one would be if you went with that terrible population growth argument, where if you assume that the human population always expands at a constant rate with no limiting factors, there would be more people than there are atoms in the universe by now. But sure, give this terrible, terrible argument top billing if you really want to embarrass yourself that badly.
See, magnetic fields are actually what keep our planets, and keep the Earth in particular, from being bombarded with space dust.
Now, we get bombarded by space dust all the time. You're thinking of cosmic rays, solar wind, and radiation. But yeah, I've stopped expecting you to get even the basic details right when it comes to anything science related.
But in space, wouldn't it be a different scenario based on the fact that, you know, the space and the air in the space is much different than the air we have here?
That out of his mouth go burning lamps and sparks of fire leap out. The dinosaurs they discovered have, the dragons they've discovered have chambers in the back of their head. It's where they can breathe fire. But that's just a couple things. I mean,
if it's about survival of the fittest and we evolved from African Americans into other Americans, what about the African Americans that are still alive today?
Well, I don't see anything wrong with quote mining. I believe if we study history, you know, the Confederates were able to shoot pterodactyls.
T-Rex, they had short, stubby arms. And apparently now the chicken's able to do a handstand with those arms.
Honestly, John, I don't know a ton of technical terms. I'm very simple when it comes to science. I just enjoy simple science.
I kind of want to start a museum now that directly addresses creationist talking points and call it the Air in Space Museum.
If the magnetic field was too strong, we would die. If it's too weak, we would die. It has to be just right in order to protect us from issues from outer space, or sunlight, deadly radiation coming through.
Well, it is true that a ridiculously strong magnetic field would not be a good thing. There is a huge area in the middle where life would be just fine. It's not very precise at all.
And so, the Earth's magnetic field in particular is very important, and it is vital to our survival. The half-life of the Earth's magnetic field is actually 1,400 years.
Nope, the Earth's magnetic field does not have a half-life, by which I assume you mean that every 1,400 years the strength of the field is cut in half. We can actually directly measure the historical strength of the magnetic field by examining minerals, and we can plot the magnetic field strength over time, and we can see right now we're coming down off a peak where the magnetic field is the strongest it's been for the last 80,000 years, and even after seeing about a 10% decrease over the past two centuries, it's still far stronger today than it has been for most of the past 80,000 years. If it had a half-life, then it should currently be at its weakest, but even if you disagree with the dates on this chart, there is no question that it is stronger now than it was in the past, which kind of destroys the argument that it's decaying at a constant rate.
And so what that means is that every 1,400 years, the Earth's magnetic field gets chopped in half. And so you can only lose so much before you've lost it all.
Yeah, that's what I figured you meant. And that is just flat out wrong.
And if the magnetic field gets too weak, like I said, the sun's rays will penetrate the Earth's atmosphere and kill everything on the Earth.
Matt, do yourself a huge favor and learn the correct terminology for the shit that you're talking about. The sun's rays do penetrate the atmosphere. How else could I work on my tan? Rays are way too general of a term to just say that like that.
With the half-life being only 1,400 years, you take that back, even 10,000 years. If you were to go beyond 10,000 years, the Earth's magnetic field would be so powerful that it would literally kill everything on Earth as well.
Yes, if you start with a really, really, really bad assumption that isn't backed up by any scientific data whatsoever, you can get to a really, really, really bad conclusion that also isn't backed up by any scientific data whatsoever.
So, no matter how the evolutionists or atheists want to play this game of millions and billions of years, it's not going to go their way.
For most, if not all, of your points, if you take just a moment to briefly glance at the scientific literature on the subject, they can actually be used as evidence for old ages, and they work better in that context than in a young Earth context. So you're wrong, as usual. Actually, come to think of it, I'm not sure I've ever heard Matt say a true thing. That's quite impressive, really.
Because truly, the facts are on our side. Observation is on our side. Everything that we see in the solar system actually demonstrates that the Earth and the universe and the galaxies, the entire world is young and was created recently and not billions of years ago.
You just have to ignore about 99% of it in order to reach that conclusion.
I want this content to get out to the masses.
Does he, though? I'm taking bets now as to whether or not he does his usual thing when I respond to him and make his video private for a few days until the views he gets from me start to settle down. Almost like he doesn't actually want to get his stuff out there. He's more interested in having a creationist circle jerk. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from the comment that Matt thought was so good as to be worth pinning under this video by the user Young Earth Creation. It's a long one, so bear with me. Get ready, Matt. First one equals, but the Oort cloud. You know, the cloud we have never seen but have faith it exists and throws out comets and meteors? Yeah, that one. We can't see more dead stars because the stellar wind blew the debris away. Forget the fact that the number of supernovas we see perfectly matches how many we would expect to see if young Earth creation were true. That's just a fluke. That's right, evolutionists. Equals calculations prove that remnants should keep expanding from these novas for hundreds of thousands of years if our galaxy is truly billions of years old. Yet they do not find a single one of these, but they should be able to observe an estimated 5,000 supernova remnants with a diameter of 300 light years or more, according to physical equations. Yet the nearby parts of our galaxy in which we could observe such gas and dust shells contains only 250 supernova remnants. That number is consistent with only about 7,000 years worth of supernovas. Oh, but Matt, don't you realize that the poles will reverse? LOL, gee, we didn't think of that, did we, Matt? Whatever are we going to do? Forget math, forget logic, ignore that a 5% decrease per 100 years is what we have measured and we can't go back even 10,000 years without the total death of life on Earth, nor even the possibility of having a polar reversal cycle every 10,000 year without killing all life as well. Who needs logic and reason when we have such amazing evolutionary rescue devices? These strawman atheist responses are so amusing to me. Okay, let's see. For number one, the Oort cloud is certainly a potential source for fresh comets, but like I said, the scattered disk is also a likely candidate, and it has been directly observed. They don't seem to have even figured out a strawman response to the Pluto is still warm, though, argument, possibly because comparing a planet's temperature to a cup of coffee is just so obviously ridiculous that even a strawman could beat it. Same goes for Saturn's rings, I guess, but man, do they hang on to that supernova thing, insisting that the ripples in a pond should be eternal, and, of course, ignoring the fact that Matt had to double the rate at which supernovae actually occur in order to get the apparent age of the galaxy down to an acceptable range for creationists. So, no, it's not coincidental, it's Matt telling lies again. Though, admittedly, that lie doesn't originate with him, so even though we know that Matt does lie all the time, that one might just be complete ignorance mixed with incompetence. And then, apparently, magnetic pole reversal solves the problem of the magnetic field getting weaker? I mean, that is one proposed reason as to why it is weakening so quickly at the moment, but in and of itself, a pole reversal is completely irrelevant here, as the rest of the information that Matt provided about the magnetic field is just flat out and demonstrably not true. But this defense against the evolutionist arguments were so good, in Matt's opinion, that they warranted being pinned to the top of the comment section. Thanks for watching. Remember to head over to vicerhino.com/donate to help with my holiday fundraiser for Project Share Niagara. I'm actually writing this one on the same day as I recorded the last video, and I'll be recording it before that one goes live, so I don't know yet whether I have to put in my $250 match donation, but I like to think that you guys are all so generous that you just blew right past it. But unless something completely amazing happened, there's still a long way to go to hit our goal, so let's keep it up. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Jeffrey Dahmer, Mark McManus, Mark Ketchum, Clench Eastwood, Lynn Dobbs, and all the rest, who are the glorious rings surrounding the planet that is my channel. If you'd like to fall into me, you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist. Links to social media, all the ways to support the channel, and to my other projects like my podcast with my daughter can be found at links.vicerhino.com. If for whatever reason you want to send me stuff, my P.O. Box address is in the description. See you next time!